I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to them. And your support, or dana, also makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So who was here last week? Just curious. Wow, okay, quite a few of you. So those of you who weren't here last week, I spoke about the art of the pause. And the art of the pause is about really how our practice can help us to do this more and more often, to come into more of a pause. And tonight, I want to keep going with that theme a little bit and talk about how we can be in that pause more and more, which means learning to be with or within longer spaces of silence, you know, and how important that is to really discover and nurture more of that silence for ourselves. The poet and writer John O'Donohue, who I love, tells us, one of the reasons so many people are suffering from stress is not that they're doing stressful things, but that they allow so little time for silence, which I really think is true, you know, this day and age especially. And as I was thinking about this talk last week, I kept thinking about the many years I spent in Brooklyn, New York. Those of you who have lived there know that New York is really kind of the opposite of silence. You may have heard that old phrase that New York never sleeps. It's really true. It's not propaganda. It really literally never, ever, 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 ever ends, the noise. You know, if it wasn't buses and ambulance and screaming and laughter outside the windows on the streets, you know, it was parties and stereos and televisions and high heels stomping on the ceiling at all hours of the night and into the morning, really constantly. People say, oh, I'd love to live in New York City. It's fun to visit. That's what I want to tell you. So, you know, leaving the apartment then wasn't usually helpful either, actually. It was actually even louder on the streets. It was quieter a little bit more in the apartment. If you go out onto the streets, it's not like in the country where you go outside for quiet. Don't do that in New York City. So I distinctly remember the week that my husband and I decided to call it quits and move back to the country. Our landlord, who lived below us in the brownstone where we were living, was a very large man, and he was also a very, very loud talker with a huge, big, booming voice. So sadly, this meant that he lived alone. We could hear every single conversation, everything, every conversation that he ever had with anybody on the phone, you know, all his friends and relatives, all his personal conversations we were privy to. And sadly, this included his nightly 2 a.m. calls to the sex lines. Yeah. Oh, boy. And our bedroom was right above his, and giving you too many details, but after about 2 years of this, you know, almost every night, 2 o'clock, we were brave enough to finally complain, and I think we only did it, we were just sleep deprived. It was all out of sleep deprivation, and instead of apologizing or being embarrassed, he yelled at us and told us it was our fault. And what he shouted at us was, you shouldn't be living in New York if you expect it to be like a monastery, right? And this was true in so many ways. But especially really about wanting that kind of monastic silence. And so this was one of the main things that convinced me finally that we needed to move. I really was craving that kind of more monastic silence, or just a little bit of silence, really, anything. And I'm sure, as most of you know here, both intuitively and experientially, silence is so incredibly healing. It can be so incredibly healing. And, of course, meditators have known this truth for thousands and thousands of years, the benefits of silence. And what I find so cool today is that this healing aspect of silence is being clinically proven to be true by all this research that's out there. It's actually modern science is now able to prove how beneficial silence is. And one of the ways that scientists have started researching the benefits of silence is by studying the adverse effects of its opposite, which is noise. Here it might be interesting to know that the Latin root meaning of the word noise actually means queasiness or pain. Isn't that interesting? That's a Latin root of noise. The famous nurse and social reformer Florence Nightingale was onto this idea way back in the mid-1800s. She wrote, "Unnecessary noise is the most cruel absence of care that can be inflicted on sick or well. Every careless clatter or banal bit of banter can be a source of alarm, distress, and loss of sleep for recovering patients. Quiet, she said, is a part of care, as essential for patients as medication." Is it that essential? And again, today, science is showing that she was right. They've discovered, among other things, that even moderate levels of unwanted noise can contribute to an increase in cortisol, which means, of course, an increase in stress. Sometimes a chronic ringing in the ears. Sometimes it can even lead to hearing loss, a rise in blood pressure, an increased incidence of coronary artery disease, and hypertension, all kinds of adverse effects of just simple noise, being around too much noise. And so whenever we're exposed to noise, what I find interesting is that it is literally shaking us, right? Sometimes in very small ways, and in very small ways, it can be chronically stressful over time. But sometimes in really powerful ways, it can shake us, as we all know. So you might, for instance, notice that whenever I invite you to pay attention to sound, right, I also ask you most of the time to sense vibration, because sound is vibration. It's actually vibrating our bodies, so in a way, shaking us, right, small or big ways. And so sound is received in the body and experienced in the body as varying levels of vibration. And when we're meditating, we can really start noticing the subtleties of the vibration of sound in our body. I think it's really kind of fascinating. So what happens, you'll let me get a little clinical here, because I think it's interesting. The sound waves vibrate these tiny bones in the ears, and then these transmit these movements into these tiny shell-shaped cochlea, which then converts the vibrations into electrical signals that are received by our brain. In the brain, these electrical signals are received, again, by clusters of neurons that are associated with memory and emotion. Okay? So when the noise is received by these neurons, what happens is that it prompts an immediate release of that cortisol, which is that toxic stress hormone. And it can be a really, really tiny little bits or a lot. And in the body, a rush of cortisol is supposed to give us a quick bit of energy to help us to respond to whatever's happening, right? There's a noise. It gives that, you know, we want to be able to respond to that noise in some way. And of course, this was super helpful to our ancestors, our ancient ancestors, who needed to be on high alert for any kind of rustling in the bushes, since it could really literally be something like a huge saber-toothed tiger. If you heard a rustling, you had to be nervous about that. Or it could be someone from another tribe, you know, who's coming literally to kill you. So you had to be, you know, pay attention. You think about people in war, right? And they're constantly on alert. Our ancestors, it was similar to that. And today, of course, we're not at war here. And what we're hearing is rarely, you know, a giant tiger or an enemy from another tribe, but our bodies still react to noise like something is out to get us, something we need to be wary about, you know, or pay very close attention to. And we do this unconsciously most of the time. And this is why people who live in consistently loud environments often experience chronically elevated levels of stress. They're unable to find that relief that a bit of silence can bring, kind of like constantly bombarded with this, you know, twitchy stress. Science has shown that in order for our bodies to come into more balance, we actually require longer periods of silence so that we can return to a sense of homeostasis. So it's just like we might require food or water. It's like medicine, right? Just like Florence Nightingale suggested. We need that. And so most often we get this at night, right? We turn everything off, I'm assuming. Most of us turn everything off. We get very quiet, and we go into our bedrooms, and that's how we sleep. If there's noise, it's really difficult, right? People who are in rooms with people who are snoring, you can understand it's difficult when you hear that. And yet many of us don't think about how much daily dosages of silence that we're getting. How much of your daily life, just something to check out, are you getting your daily doses of that 2 hours of silence in your life consciously, not unconsciously, not just letting it slip by, oh, this is silence, I'm not really aware of it. Are you aware that you're getting 2 hours of silence? You know, sometimes it seems like this culture in particular wants to keep us swimming in noise and distraction. And, you know, we can feel like fish in an ocean sometimes. Like this noise can start to feel normal, so much so that we don't even notice it. We're not even aware of it, right? If it's on constantly. You know, so often, in fact, people who have never practiced meditation before tell me that they're a bit terrified of the silence. Really, even if it's just for 5 or 15 minutes, it's a little terrifying. Anybody feel that when they first started meditating? I can't sit for, 5 minutes, it's going to be a little scary. I see some nods. So in 2014, there was this fascinating study that I want to share where people were left alone in a lab room for 15 minutes, and they were asked to simply sit in the silence. That's all the researchers told them to do. They were asked to get rid of any distractions, right? So they took away their magazines and they asked them to get rid of their cell phones or their games. Same thing we do on a meditation retreat, right? But what researchers did give them was the ability to push a small button and shock themselves if they wanted to, okay? And what was interesting is that every single person, they had to fill out a form, right? It was a study. Every single person that went into that room said that they would be willing to pay money to not be shocked with electricity. And yet, after 15 minutes in silence, a full 67% of the men and 25% of the women chose to shock themselves, sometimes many times, rather than just sit there in the silence. I just find that fascinating. And one of the researchers who studies consciousness said, I found it quite surprising and a bit disheartening that people seem to be so uncomfortable when left to their own devices that they can be so bored that even being shocked seems more entertaining. So the good news is for us is that while the researchers concluded that many people definitely have a difficult time being alone with themselves and their thoughts, especially men apparently, for whatever reason, 67%, They also suggested that meditation and other contemplative training practices that we're doing here can help us with this. That's the good news, because it's training us how to be with our thoughts and better direct them so that we're not sort of unconsciously harming ourselves or wanting to do that. Just a few years ago, another study that I found interesting found that silence actually creates the opposite effect on the brain, the noise. And what scientists discovered is that experiencing, again, just 2 hours of silence a day can create new cells in a region of the brain that is associated with memory, emotion, and learning. You got to get those 2 hours in. One of the researchers from this study said, "We saw that silence is really helping the newly generated cells to differentiate into neurons and integrate into the system. Freedom from noise and goal-directed tasks, it appears, unites the quiet without and within, allowing our conscious workspace to do its thing, to weave ourselves into the world, to discover where we fit in. That is the power of silence." So you might notice that this quote includes the words freedom from noise and goal-directed tasks, right? So when we're talking about the kind of silence that leads to more balance and healing, what we're really talking about is not just about a quiet room or space, although that's really part of it, okay? What we're talking about is what in the Buddhist practice and teachings is called noble silence, okay? So in the sutras, the Buddha actually gives us some very specific instructions about how we can practice noble silence. So it does start out with finding quiet surroundings, as well as, of course, all the other instructions, all the whole teaching, the whole package about how we can quiet the mind and the body. So in his instructions, the Buddha asks us to make a real effort to practice in silence as much as possible. Quote, going to a forest, to the foot of a secluded tree, or to a solitary dwelling. I'll read that again. These are his instructions from the suttas. Going to a forest, to the foot of a secluded tree, or to a solitary dwelling. And the part that I've always loved about these instructions is that the Buddha suggests going outside first, right? Really is the best option as a way to connect with nature, since don't we all really feel a natural connection and peace when we're outside, right? We all do. And aren't natural noises, even if they're loud, like maybe a rainstorm, or sometimes when we're doing the Blandy walk, we go down and listen to the tree frogs. Man, they are loud. They're right? Who's done that with me? They're incredible, but they're really loud. Or maybe a wood fire, if you've ever really stopped and listened to a wood fire, or cows. I live surrounded by cows. They can get really loud, right? But aren't they all vastly, vastly more pleasant than mechanical sound? Anything you think about in nature, even a thunderstorm, right, with lightning, it's so much more satisfying than anything like a refrigerator or a heater, right, or even human noise. That's probably the worst, right, because we got a lot of shoulds around that. The lightning just happens, but talking, you know, and, you know, the truth about this is, you know, we're truly not separate from nature. We are made of earth, water, you know, fire, air, stars. We're made of the elements. And so there's this natural attunement that we can tap into whenever we're out in it. And it is much easier, I think, to discover that sense of silence and connection. And I want to stop here just for a moment and say that while it is important to try to, of course, find a quiet space, as we all know, absolute, complete silence is almost impossible, unless you're in a sensory deprivation tank, right? But in normal, our regular, normal daily lives, even right now, even when we're trying to have quiet, it just never is, okay? And so wanting it that way, wanting it to be that way, causes so much stress and suffering. And so part of our practice, maybe a large part of it actually, is learning to be with or allow the sounds, remembering that it's our resistance, our struggling, again, that's going to just cause us so much stress and frustration unnecessarily. While I was living in New York City, I actually learned a lot about how to practice with noise because it was so constant. It was kind of like boot camp for practicing with sound. So I ended up making up this meditation for myself that helped me with it. And I think I've shared this in here with you all before, but it really helped me. So I want to share that again. What I did was I was sitting and I had this image of, came to my mind that, or this idea came to my mind that I had died and that I was given, I had been given 45 minutes to come back to life with my eyes closed and meditate and just listen and be in my body, experience what it would feel like to be in a live body, and then try to figure out where I was, because I've moved quite a lot in my life, and what age I was, right? So I made a game of it. And that way I was really able to like check into my body and, you know, what aches and pains and, you know, am I skinny, am I chubby right now, what's going on, you know, how long's my hair, etc. And then the other cool thing was listening to noise. Where am I, right? So instead of being annoyed with my neighbor who was constantly running through the house in her high heels, like at 5 in the morning, getting ready for work, I would hear her high heels and it'd be, oh, wow, I'm in Brooklyn. This is so cool, right? There's my neighbor. Or I would hear the old heaters go on, you know, the sizzling sound, or I would hear the buses and the, oh, I'm in Brooklyn. There's this, there's that. And I, even today, I would love to go back and do that, right? It made it, the resistance go away. And it also made my awareness turn on because I was curious about it. I was curious rather than, oh, I want that to stop. I hate her. What, you know, all of that stuff that creates stress. So one of the ways that's really important that we can work with noise in our lives, are, and when we're meditating, but in our lives in general, is to practice not resisting it. Okay, just becoming really curious about it instead. Noticing what it feels like in the body. What's the vibration? You know, how is that affecting me? Just notice, be curious. Generally, though, per the Buddha's instructions, we are also trying to do our best to find the quietest place and time to practice so that we can better access that quiet. Okay? And then once we've created the quietest space we can, we then allow ourselves to become quiet. And this does not mean just not speaking. Okay? As we all know, with noble silence, it means consciously quieting our bodies and allowing ourselves to become more still. And as you all know, in the beginning, this can be really difficult, right? And if you're new and you're struggling with staying still while you're meditating, I want to encourage you to stick with it. And when I say new, I mean 5 years, okay? I want to encourage you to stay with it. Sometimes it happens quickly. Sometimes it just takes a while. It's a practice. But the more we practice, the more we learn that we really can still the body. We can be still in our bodies, right? Not have to shock ourselves to find enjoyment. No, we can stop fidgeting so much. We can stop shuffling our feet or playing with our hands or changing our posture a lot, okay? And as we do this more and more, and the more we're able to become still, what happens is that it starts to kind of feel pretty good in the body to feel still. You know, it feels really nice to still the body. And because the mind and body aren't disconnected, wow, then the mind starts to still, and that feels really good as well, right? So it's a practice. And as our practice deepens, we discover that we can access that more and more easily. You know, it doesn't take 20 minutes. It's like it's there. We can access it because we've practiced. This then, of course, translates into our daily lives, right? So we almost naturally start to pay more attention to our bodies, the more and more we practice, we'll notice our bodies more in our daily lives, and we'll start consciously slowing them down more, quieting them down more, because it feels good, and we've recognized that during practice, okay? So we'll start to notice more and more when the body is in some way being noisy with fidgeting or stress or running. You know, we get into these modes where we're like running so fast we're bumping into things and dropping things, right? We can consciously slow them down and let things go. We can drop the shoulders. We can let the jaw relax if we're clenching. We can unclench our fingers. We can notice our tummies, let the tummy be soft. Just let everything go, just drop. And we've practiced this through our meditation, so it's easier. And so as we become more mindful of how much noise we're making with our bodies as we're going through our lives, often we learn that we like to move more slowly, savoring the walk, savoring the movements of the body, rather than just rushing and actually not being in our bodies. So we're more in our bodies, embodied, but going much slower and enjoying the whole thing. Right? Because this is where we live. This is home, right? And so when we're practicing to consciously and mindfully eliminate noise during noble silence, we're also talking about eliminating all the things that tend to distract our minds from our direct experience. During retreats, for instance, many of you know we practice this noble silence by agreeing not to read or write in our journals. That's a hard one for a lot of people. Or listen to music, okay? Or use the internet. You know, or even eat a lot of snacks after meals. You know, it's like boredom eating. You know, eating snacks or tea. Here's a really good explanation of why we do this from a longtime practitioner. It says, the problem with writing in a journal, for instance, during a deep retreat is that it pulls your mind out of the non-discursive, non-conceptual state that you've cultivated by meditating all day and keeping complete silence. One of the goals of retreat is to quiet the chattiness of your mind and become more open to non-conceptual understanding. Writing down your experiences in a journal works against this and draws you back into discursive and conceptual way of thinking. Okay? I thought it was a beautiful way to describe that, why we don't do it. When we're on retreat, in the same way, we agree not to speak to one another, and actually to avoid eye contact, which a lot of people, again, find deeply uncomfortable when they first try it. And this is because social conversation tends to keep the mind active, doesn't it? Right? And periods of not talking can really then help the mind to start to rest a little bit more. So often, not only are our emotions activated by talking and listening, but even when we're anticipating, right, talking or listening. Think about anticipating going to a party, right? There's that anxiety, or going to someplace new, or going into a crowd of people, or even just having to talk to somebody. There can be anxiety that's produced with that. So that's one of the reasons we don't do it. So at first, those of you who have tried retreat, the silence can feel really awkward and just completely weird. Like socially unacceptable, right? Like there's silence at the dinner table or something. But eventually it starts to quiet both the mind and the emotions because they're connected. And as our mental and emotional lives calm down, our bodies start to calm down as well because, again, they're not disconnected. And so when we're entering this noble silence during our meditation practice, we are also consciously giving ourselves sacred time to not do, not direct, not anticipate, not plan. Okay. We are asking ourselves to be very quiet and simply take time to listen inwardly to be rather than do, right? So hard, you know, which is why it's a practice. When we aren't in formal meditation, then this translates into our lives of discovering more and more moments of just being, just sitting, just walking, just drinking tea, just being present without, you know, distracting ourselves or planning, picking up our phones, figuring everything out in our lives, you know, going away from ourselves, escaping, dreaming, you know, whatever it looks like. More and more we find moments of just being awake, you know, awakened, present to this precious life. Norton Juster, the noted children's author, writes, "Have you ever heard the wonderful silence just before dawn? Or the quiet and calm just as a storm ends? Or perhaps you know the silence when you haven't the answer to a question you've been asked. Or the hush of a country road at night. Or the expectant pause of a room full of people when someone is just about to speak. Or, most beautiful of all, the moment after the door closes and you're alone in the whole house. Each one is different, you know, and all very beautiful if you listen carefully." So I think it's interesting that the words silent and listen are actually made up of the exact same letters, right? So they're really interchangeable. When we enter the silence, or if you like, that sacred pause, what we're really doing is listening, right? But not waiting for answers or explanations. We're just listening. We're really just being in that silence, allowing everything to pass through it without resisting and without having a particular goal. So hard. In an interview, Mother Teresa was once asked about her prayer life. And the interviewer asked, "When you pray, what do you say to God?" Mother Teresa said, "I don't talk. I simply listen." And the interviewer said, "Ah, and then what is it that God says to you when you pray?" Mother Teresa said, "He also doesn't talk. He also simply listens." And there was a long silence, and the interviewer seemed to be a bit confused. He didn't seem to know what to ask next. Finally, Mother Teresa broke the silence by saying, "If you can't understand the meaning of what I've just said, I'm sorry, but there is no way I can explain it any better." Just love that. The writer Ann Young writes, "Silence enables us to see the sacredness of all life, to see life steady and to see it whole. In an age that has lost all sense of the sacred, of awe and wonder at the divine penetration throughout the physical human plane, how much we need the recovery of silence. Without some sense of awe, there is little basis for meaning." So when we can become quiet and simply listen, often what happens is that we can suddenly sense that awe, right? Along with that sense of wholeness and connection in the silence. We can hear more clearly what our hearts have been trying to tell us if we listen. In that silence, we're suddenly present to what's actually here. And we can sometimes suddenly feel what it is that we may have been avoiding, right? Not wanting to feel or trying to suppress. Maybe in the silence we suddenly connect with our sadness or our grief or our anger or our loneliness, whatever it is, right? Or maybe we're just able to simply finally stop and feel pure joy. Right? Or peace, or awe. But we're not going to feel any of that if we're constantly moving and running, making ourselves noisy. So when we can access that silence, we can also start to hear all the things that we've been saying to ourselves, everything that we've been just automatically on autopilot, automatically believing. And instead of being swept up in a constant flow of our thoughts, we can start to better access the silence that comes between the thoughts. There's actually silence between thoughts. And after a while, the cool thing is those periods of silence between the thoughts become longer, and we can not only connect with that silence, but dwell in them. We can become more and more, we can become that silence so that we can more clearly hear our thoughts or our beliefs, whatever's coming through. And of course, this is when we can start to question those beliefs and offer ourselves great kindness and compassion. And that last part is really important. Really, it's the whole thing. It's really important. Listen with great kindness. That's how we listen. We don't listen so we can judge ourselves or so that we can fix something. We listen with whatever it is, with great kindness. But we can't do any of this well, listen well, feel well, again, when we are constantly distracted by all the noise in our lives, which includes our own constant mind chatter, right? And yet, as those researchers showed, being in the silence can be incredibly difficult. Even when we want it to be quiet, our mind has other plans, right? This is why we're practicing. We want it, and our mind just will not stop. One of the reasons for this is that, you know, as you all have experienced probably, when we start to sit down and listen, the silence can often magnify our inner chatter. Right? Suddenly it feels overwhelming sometimes, like, wow, this is what I've really been thinking about. This is what my mind has been doing, you know? And we might start to think, oh my God, why am I doing this practice? It's not working at all. I'm actually thinking more. This is not working. And, you know, the inner chatter can include all those thoughts and feelings and conversations and even uncomfortable physical sensations that we've mostly been trying to avoid. So in a very real way, if you start to notice and checking out, the noise and the distraction in a way provides a kind of salve or an escape, maybe just like a glass of wine might. It helps to keep those thoughts or those physical sensations away. We prefer to be in the noise, right? Because we don't want to be there a lot of the times with our minds, what it's saying in our bodies, what they're doing. But the good news is that the more we practice, the more we become comfortable with and familiar with the silence, and the more comfortable we become with listening to our own thoughts and feelings without judging them and without suppressing them with great kindness. Okay? We become more comfortable with simply watching them pass and resting in the awareness, the silence, the pure presence, if you will, that is simply letting it all flow through. And after a while, as many of you in here know, what happens is that internal dialogue at some point also starts to get quiet. And we can begin to not only slow down and become more quiet, but become more present with what is actually here right now, instead of being so caught up in the noise and distraction that is our talking mind. And as we do this, we experience a more heightened sense of intimacy with the world, a deeper sense of that pure presence, of simply being awake, right? And what we start to achieve in our lives is a more sustained silence, both in our practice and our daily lives. And we start to become more and more awake in that more sustained silence. Our senses become more alive, and our inner and outer world has so much more clarity, right? So, for instance, you might begin to notice the sound of birdsong more often. Just hear it more often. Or notice all the different sounds outside, you know, all the different songbirds individually, right? Whenever we can allow ourselves to tap into that silence, we can also start to hear our quieter thoughts and emotions, which normally get drowned out by either outside noise or, again, that constant inner noise or dialogue. And in this more sustained silence and presence, we can begin to really just experience all of it as it is, not how we think it is. As it is, not how we think it is. In the silence, we can actually begin to let go of words and concepts and preconceived notions altogether and simply go to direct experience. The great teacher Krishnamurti explains it this way. If you would look at a flower, any thought about that flower prevents you from looking at it. The words, the rose, the violet, it is this flower, it is that species, keeps you from observing. To look, there must be no interference of the word, which is the objectifying of thought. There must be freedom from the word, and to look, there must be silence. Otherwise, you can't look. If you look at your wife or husband, all the memories that you've had, either of pleasure or pain, interfere with looking. It is only when you look without the image that there is a relationship. Your verbal image and the verbal image of the other have no relationship at all. They are non-existent. So I think I'm going to end there, and we're a little over time. We're right at time. So I'm just going to invite you into one last sit, very brief. So just taking a nice deep breath in, deep breath out. Being embodied, being home in the body, breathing, noticing the breath. I'm going to invite you to see if you can tap into the silence, maybe the silence between thoughts even. And we access that through letting go and just being present with our senses and the body and our breath this moment. This moment. No struggle. Let it be simple. Experiencing all of it exactly as it is, not how we think it is. Notice goal-directed thoughts. Let those go. finally just listening to these words from Mary Oliver about how I go to the woods. Ordinarily, I go to the woods alone with not a single friend, for they are all smilers and talkers and therefore unsuitable. I don't really want to be witnessed talking to the catbirds or hugging the old black oak. I have my way of praying, as you no doubt have yours. Besides, when I am alone, I can be invisible. I can sit on the top of a dune as motionless as an uprise of weeds until the foxes run by unconcerned. I can hear the almost unhearable sound of the roses singing. If you have ever gone to the woods with me, I must love you very much.